Okay. So whenever you are ready.
Alright. I am Deanna Sachs from Cleveland State. It is April 4th, 2011. And could you please state your name?
Marty Johnston. I'm from resident of Valley View Village my entire life, which is about 5-8 miles from here.
Have you always lived in the same location?
Other than 9 months, I have lived at the current residence that I am residing at all my life, yes.
And what do you do?
Technically, I'm retired, but I'm not retired. I taught school for 33 years, 7th grade geography, had a good run there, and helped with my dad during this process of my employment and upon my retirement from the school scenario. I'm tilling roughly 50-some acres of land that has been in my family since 1870, I believe, or 1869, one of the two. My great-grandfather came from Germany. George Eisman, I believe. I know Eisman's. And he came over and stayed 2 years down the street, and I think it was 1870, bought part of the farm which I'm still residing on and added to it as time went on. And I guess I'm the fourth generation to own the farm.
So after your grandfather, your father took over, or your great-grandfather,
he died in a agricultural accident. One fall or one winter, they were chopping corn stalks in the chopper and had long sleeves hanging down. And my grandfather's the story I'm told by my father. To watch it. Well, he didn't, and he got caught tangled up and died of gangrene. My grandfather bought the farm from his brothers-in-laws. My father bought it from my grandfather, and my father gave it to me. And here we are. The fourth generation, as I state. We've sold during the Depression, what was the problem? A road came through, and the third thing, the cattle got, oh my goodness, some disease, had to get rid of the cattle. We sold some land off to keep the farm. It wasn't hepatitis, I can't think of the disease the cattle got, but to pay for the road going through, the Depression and the cattle problem with disease. Sold land off. My dad bought it back over time, and we just about got all of it back that once was the single parcel.
And beside, you said you were a 7th grade geography school teacher?
Correct.
Did you, when you were teaching, were you farming as well? Or were
yes.
you just focusing on teaching?
No, I was born there and felt compelled, wanted to. I farmed whenever I could. Obviously, school teaching helps during certain months, but there's another public job that would be better, but I won't get into that. But, yes, I farmed all my life, helping my dad and even myself, and continue to do so today as I went through three jumpsuits today, getting wet on a tractor, trying to get something done before the rain came.
And this is why you're not technically retired?
That's why, as you well state, I'm not technically retired, and I don't know if I could ever be totally retired because I don't think it's good for oneself. If one has half a brain, you're doing something. If one sits in a chair, I don't think you contribute much to society, and I think I'm contributing somewhat growing food for various peoples.
Can you tell me about the community?
Valley View? Well, obviously it's along the Cuyahoga River, and all water flows into it. That's why we're on the news whenever there's a flood. It was an entirely a agricultural economy up until the 50s. Then when the economy of the United States broke loose, because needless to say we're close to Cleveland, which was booming at that time, our village transformed into commercial activity, some manufacturing more commercial nature, and the farming base depleted quite quickly. It used to be, as my dad stated, one could go Canal Road and there'd be no brush, no nothing, because everyone back then, be they a farmer or be they just a simple resident, had cows in the pasture. That's how they got their milk, and they had maybe a beefer, how they got their beef. Well, obviously, you travel down there now. It's growing up to brush, and in my humble opinion, non-scenic, but that's the economic change, as you both being history people understand.
And what type of farm do you own?
Well, right now I grow vegetables. Back then, as I stated somewhat, we had most people who farmed before the 50s had dairy. And as things change, obviously, as I've stated before, things change to vegetables a little bit. And we used to milk 30-some Holsteins back then. And then, of course, in the 50s, the economics changed agriculturally, and the life on the farm economically was not all that great. My dad had a chance to work for a steel mill, and there went the cows, and we thought then he had ventured somewhat into sweet corn, which we expanded into the 60s and 70s because it was a profitable venture versus dairy. We also had some hogs, and of course, as the 70s and 80s progressed, massive farms and mass production hurt the little farmer, and eventually the hogs went, the cattle went, and now I have swung to basically vegetables, basically sweet corn, and the pick-your-own operation of various vegetables in the fall.
I have sweet corn, peppers, tomatoes, eggplants, cabbage, and grass.
Yes, I believe I told the gal for the national park, yes, that is correct. Acreage-wise, sweet corn takes up the biggest partial. But with today's technology changing, I never thought, as I have stated to people, 15 years ago, let's see, I was still teaching, needless to say, or not needless to say. About 12 years ago, technology changed. The Israelites have a paucity of water, so they had drip irrigation. I never thought, as I started to say, that I would be planting so much plants under plastic with drip irrigation, which I have garlic growing right now. In fact, I fertilized it a tad yesterday because things change. Things change. And yes, as you state, the crops, that's what I'm primarily doing now, peppers in the fall, some cabbage for the ethnics, and others, eggplant, tomatoes. Now I've started some garlic and onions. About 4 years ago, my Amish friends, I saw they were growing onions, a very sweet candy onion. I got into that, and I tried a few garlic last year, which went well. So I put in more this year that I got most of the bulbs from an Amish kid down there that I've become acquainted with.
Why raspberries as your main fruit?
Well, strawberries used to be my main fruit. I used to have 3 or 4 acres of strawberries. Right now I'm down to 1.5 acres and came close to plowing them down. There's less strawberries and peaches grown in Ohio than the last 50 years. The number one reason, it's work. Raspberries have come forth in the last 20 years as a very desirable fruit. It's not as good as blueberries, which I tried at one time, which the deer got me out of the blueberry business before I started. But the raspberries, is the bushes they have today are not too difficult to maintain, and the yuppies pick them, and they're happy to do so, contrary to strawberries, because as you will,
I'm sure, identify with me. Young people today in the modern household, they don't pick strawberries. They don't freeze. They don't make jam. They go to the store, you get strawberries, or what they call strawberries anyhow, in the store. You can get them year-round. Let's see, in the 70s, people used to pick 2, 3, 4 pecks. Today, people come out with their grandkids and pick 2 quarts. And it's becoming non-profitable. And this, I'm going out of the strawberry business. It's too much investment money and tremendous work. And as I say, the market has changed. Now, if you go to Wayne County, strawberries are still a pretty good scenario, but it's a different culture. It's a different culture. Up here, we obviously, the greater Cleveland area, and no offense intended, but the modern person today does not prepare food. They bring it home or go out. Although ball canning had a 30% jump in sales 2 years ago, because some people are going back to canning because of the expense, obviously. I'm ventured a tad away from what you asked, but that's the way it goes.
I know you said that you used to be dairy, and then you slowly transitioned into various vegetables. Are these that you grow now mostly from you or your father?
No, this is mine. My dad was strictly sweet corn and a few tomatoes, very few. But I went into this arena because the market changed and I saw a chance to do things perhaps a little better economically. And, it may die off also. Who knows? But there was a fellow who had excellent strawberry success down the valley at one time in the 50s, and he went out of the business, as I told him, because his 2 teenage workers left him. And he was stuck without labor. But I had 3 or 4 acres at one time. And now I'm down. If I plant 1,000 next year, that'd be plenty, because it's not at my age and the economics involved. It isn't worth it.
Which product is your best seller?
Sweet corn.
Sweet corn? Always since dairy?
Excuse me?
Always been?
Well, with respect to, you mentioned dairy. Yeah, we didn't start growing sweet corn until the late 50s as a little extra income. And then, as I say, the culture changed and it was profitable. And today it still isn't bad. It still isn't as good as it was, because people don't want to take the sweet corn home and husk it in the air-conditioned house, have boiling water. And, things change. It used to be people take the corn home. Now they want to husk the corn at one's buying area so they don't have to bother with the husk at home. And, things change.
Your great-grandfather started the farm. Can you tell me more about him?
I don't really know that much about him. All I know is he bought the farm and paid for it, which was a fantastic chore, and raised 6, 8 kids before he lost his wife, which was my grandmother, or my grandmother's mother. I know he was one of the people in the Cahoga Valley that cleared land for agriculture. One of the fields we farmed down at the southern end of Cahoga County, going up from the Frazine House, I guess that's what they call it. It was about a 1.5, 2 mile hike from my property with horses back then. But I know he cleared that field, the biggest field that we farmed at that time, which was 3 fields. And eventually my dad and I farmed 6 fields in the valley. One of them was 10 acres. That was the biggest one. And then the smallest one was probably 1.5 acres. But I know my grandfather, as they talk about putting me on the stump in the lower field when I was obviously much, much younger, while my dad worked the land. And as I recall, I never remember the stump, but obviously I farmed down there for myself for 3 or 4 decades before things changed.
Do you And how many acres do you have now?
I own about 55 acres. And that's probably close to the original farm. But we used to rent a lot of land back in the 50s. We probably rented another 50 or 60 or 70. In fact, we used to pasture, I'm told, part of the Metro Parks before it was Metro Park. And then when they got it, I think it was about 1950, we could no longer pasture it. When the Metro Park buttresses my property, as does the National Park.
And have you, the 55 acres, have you owned that with your father, or have you purchased more?
No, I haven't purchased any. There's nothing to purchase around here because I'm surrounded by suburbia and encapsulated by the park system. There's nothing I can purchase close by. Anything that I would purchase after being in Wayne County, and at my vintage, I am looking to purchase at this point nothing.
Do you have any other family members working on the farm?
I have a brother living there, but he doesn't help all that much, no. I have a son that I think he is going to stay south for his future. So I'm the lonesome polecat right now.
Besides family, then, who else works on the farm? Like, what other type of work?
I have a family across the street that's had four boys, and they've all helped me throughout their youth. And I have a couple retired teachers who want to get away from their wives, so they come over and help me. And we have a good time selling stuff out there with people. But with the machinery today, and like I said, the couple kids helped me a little bit. And I work, you know, I'm starting 14 hours days as soon as we get rid of this weather. The 14-hour days will be common. Because if you're in the vegetable business, when it's time to go, it engulfs you. It totally engulfs you.
And how did you learn to farm?
From my father. And then my uncle, who left the farm, he was an innovator. He had a great influence on me. And the last 15 years, I have become acquainted with the Amish sect in Wayne County. And they are ahead of the game in many respects. They know what they're doing. The innovations in agriculture today, a lot of them were started by the Amish, experimental, because they had to get away from dairying because there isn't any money in it anymore. And they've gone, as I'm sure you've seen, the vegetable markets, auction markets they have in Middlefield, Geauga County, and in Mount Hope. And I attend seminars down there through them and Ohio State Research to implement new stuff. One of the interesting things is the high tunnels. They're starting today, which one can have tomatoes and some strawberries, in fact, for the early market, which obviously pays off if one does it well. But I'm a little old for that, and I don't need it that badly. But it's interesting, because if the Amish can make $1,000 or a couple off a, let's say, a 30 by 80 greenhouse, tomatoes, if they can make a couple thousand extra per annum on early tomatoes, it's a tremendous benefit to them, as it would be to the English, who are getting into it also, with specialty crops of herbs, because herbs is a hot thing, as you probably, you young people, you're more cognizant of that than the older sect. In fact, like I repeat, I was amazed at how quickly I sold garlic last year.
Was there any advice, special advice, that you were handed down from your father or uncle?
Yes. Well, there's, you know, some, and a lot of the advice changes with time. And some of the advice you ignore, and some of the advice you never lay aside. And I was drilled into my head, and you never, ever put the farm as collateral for purchasing more land or something because you could lose it. And we were very, very conservative. We always tried to pay cash for whatever we bought. I have not done that necessarily all the way, but the science has come forth. My uncle was ahead of the game. He was promoting micronutrients and soil analysis back in the 60s when he moved away and went down to Wayne County. And today it's really coming to fruition with agriculture. In fact, these are soil analysis over the last couple of years of my place, various plots and things. Nobody talked about calcium and boron and manganese 20, 30 years ago, and I'm looking at even copper and zinc and sulfur content. It's with the economics today, and the healthiness of the soil is an important factor and part of the food problem. We're losing the nutrients in the food because we farm wrong for the last couple generations, and there's still lots of farming done that's incorrect because there's a lot of dead soil around. We don't have healthy soil, meaning micronutrients. And the seminar, March 15th it was, the guy from Ohio State was mentioning even some of the English are reverting back to rotation of crops to put stuff back in the ground, get green back in the ground to make it more healthy, because a healthy body prevents diseases, just like soil makes better food and healthier food for the consumption, which we've gotten away from. And I don't know what's going to happen, because you have the importation of food today, which I'd like to know how much food is really imported, because the government doesn't want you to know, but what they do in Mexico and South America is unbelievable. When Clinton put in NAFTA in 92, the first industry to leave the United States was agriculture, because everybody went across from Texas and California into Mexico because there was no rules, no EPA, no government regulations, and we're eating that food today.
When you say everyone was farming wrong, what do you mean? What's the difference between the way farming was and it is now?
Well, I'm not saying everyone was farming wrong. In the 50s, it was still all right, but you went to the 70s and 80s with your mega farms, it was all chemicals. And you're killing your soil, and you're not working with nature. You'd rotate crops and use plenty of herbicides, which I use too. However, you gotta work with your soil. You can't continuously plant the same crop, and it's getting back to that. We're getting back to the 30s and 40s of healthiness of the soil, even though we don't have animal manure to help it along as much as we used to.
What techniques or technology do you use?
Well, the soil analysis is probably paramount. Then you have spray today. The machines that apply sprays allow you to use less chemicals, better coverage. And you have some innovative, I wouldn't call them chemicals, I'd just call them additives to make the soil and the plant healthy, therefore requiring less use of insecticides. That's the new technological breakthrough in the last 15 years, I would say, that enhance your success, but have a better product and a more environmental friendly product. And because, as you know, if a party would see a worm in the ear of corn today, people go nuts. A generation ago, it was accepted. That's the way it was. And we're green today, but yet you got to have sweet corn without worms, and it takes a lot of spray. And I'm into a little bit of genetic altered to prevent worms, because I can't have worms, so the customers won't buy it. But the one thing about genetic altering, you don't use any insecticides.
If you're learning techniques from your Amish friends, what's the differences that they do?
Well, the sect that I'm involved with, they're growing vegetables and fruits for public auction. And therefore, they're totally dependent on the income they generate themselves. So they're trying stuff that's offered by research to get a foothold to make a few more dollars. In fact, the high tunnel scenario, one could get a grant to put up a high tunnel this year. And I don't know who was sponsoring it. Well, obviously it had to be some part of the governmental structure. And I asked my Amish friend, did you get one? He says, no, we can't. If we take a grant, we're not Amish. So they do everything themselves. And contrary, in case you don't know it, Amish pay taxes. They pay the same tax as we do, property, income. The only thing they don't pay is Social Security, because they don't collect it. They're true entrepreneurs. And obviously in our culture, we're a little more dependent. Unfortunately, it's gotten out of whack about government assistance. And I think that's one thing that's more my... And I'm not a very smart fellow, but we're punishing entrepreneurs today in the United States because of regulations. And if one is successful, then you're criticized for being successful. In my youth, if there was a successful party in the community or whatever it may be, you admired them because they use their brains, they use their willpower, their money to become successful. Today, as you can probably concur with me, if one is successful, you're criticized, even though you're running a business and employing X number of people and paying them. You're wealthy and shouldn't be doing that. No. But that may change. That may change.
Do you have animals on the farm?
No, not anymore. I used to have a few hogs. I should correct myself. I did have three beefers last summer, and my cousin is acquiring a couple more for me this summer to put on the hillside, my pasture. People like to look at it. The park likes it. And I guess we put one of them once in a while in the freezer. But no, I got out of the raising a few hogs because I am in my vintage. Like I say, I've gone to Florida a couple of winters, and it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice, and I don't miss it. And your diet changes, as you'll find out as you get older.
You mentioned before when it was more dairy, one of the reasons was animals getting hepatitis during the Depression.
Well, that caused us to have to get rid of the dairy, or not us, my grandfather. But people went out of the dairy business because, and the smaller ones today are, it's not worth it. You can't. It's a brutal. Talk about it. It's 365 days. You know where you're going to find the guy in the morning and night. You know where you're going to find the dairyman, because it is demanding. I remember as a kid, not that I'm complaining, I remember as a kid at Christmas, milk the cows first, and then you go in and have breakfast, and you open the presents, because the cows are there. And they'll start bawling if you don't milk them. But everybody was more self-sufficient. I'm relating back to what I said at the beginning about there being a cow or the valley pasture. Well, people took care of themselves more back then than they do now. As I said, everybody had a cow, a good-sized garden, and people canned and so forth. And as you well know, that doesn't happen today. That does not happen today. If you had a cow within, you know, I'm surprised I didn't get, I have good neighbors when I was spreading cow manure and hog manure. I've had good neighbors, never complained, but I was also careful when and where I put it, not to agitate them.
How old were you when you started farming, helping out around?
Oh, probably after I was started to walk. They tell the story when I was five, I was driving a tractor and people couldn't see me on it. It was so small. But I was able to jump on the clutch when I was five, and that's where I went. And now I'm trying to start and have trouble getting on the tractor.
And where do you sell most of your products now?
On my home base. I sell it out front in a very informal manner off the wagon. And I have, as I stated, a pick-your-own operation. In September-ish, we start with tomatoes and cabbage, greens also. I forgot greens. Mustard and turnips, radishes, because one of my... I'm starting to grow for, as we talk about change, the Indians from India have found me, and I grow a mustard for them, Florida broadleaf mustard. I'm the only one. I grow some hot peppers for them because they love their hot peppers, and they become good. They're starting to become excellent customers. Where the they like turnip bottoms, because in India, being a geography teacher, obviously they're coming off the winter season, savanna climate, and they grow greens and turnips in the winter. Then they grow their rice in the summer with the rain. So the Indians now want their turnips, they want their mustard, they want their hot peppers, they want their eggplant.
Have you always sold it on the side of the road, your father as well?
We started that, I guess, about 1959. We used to sell on Canal Road. And then close to Wilson Mills. And then they put the road through, and we went up. We went to sell in front of our establishment back in 60. Well, maybe it was in the early 50s we were selling at Canal Road. Then the early, when did the road go through? 60, I guess. Then we started selling on front of our place then, yes. And I've continued to do so, except for a few years I didn't do it because I was too involved with my professional career to be able to do it. But now I sell what I can out there. For how long, I don't know.
Is that the major way of selling products now?
Well, here? I'm fortunate, needless to say, because I have suburbs around me. And a lot of people still take it to, if they are growing vegetables, like I said, even the English in Middlefield and Mount Hope and other places, there's one in the Medina County too where they're taking it to a auction for vegetables for various stores to buy, because local is hot right now, as you probably might be aware of. And if you can sell a little bit in front of your stand or your farm, it's excellent, because the prices in the store are ridiculous and going to get worse. And so local produce may come back a tad if somebody wants to do it. One of the problems with agriculture, farmers are old. We're old. And I don't know if the next generation wants to work as hard as previous generation. No criticism of you, but there's a lot of labor, a lot of physical labor involved in agriculture. A lot of physical labor and mental frustration and financial frustration. It's easier to work for the government. I'm first to point that out since I'm an example of that.
And who typically buys your products?
Suburban people. I do have some ethnics. I mentioned the Indians. I'm surprised at the amount of Russians in the fall, Ukrainians, Yugoslavs who come out for cabbage, for sauerkraut, potatoes, and peppers they freeze or can.
And after corn, what would be your next best seller?
Well, probably evolving to that is peppers. Because I grow sweets, hots, medium hots. The greens ripen to red, as you know. And if you see the cost of peppers in the store, people are freezing and canning them because it's absolutely, what is it, sometimes $3.99 a pound. And they have no taste. And people comment about some of my stuff. You can actually smell the stuff. It has taste and it has smell.
What time of the year is your typical
marketing season?
Yes.
August, September, October. And sometimes I go into a tad into November. Usually close to Thanksgiving, I close up with respect to greens and turnips and mustard, depending on the weather. Cabbage can last to one time. I cut cabbage on Christmas Eve. Stored it for a little while.
And the rest of the months of the year?
I'm starting a loaf. I used to have the animals, like I say. But now it's R&R with more emphasis on R&R. Down south from where Carol came from, further south than her in Florida. So I go down there and visit agriculture down there. Right now, I should have a greenhouse going, but I farmed out some of my pepper growing to an Amishman. I got to get up here, and I got to get new plastic on my greenhouse because I should start transplanting as we speak. But I guess I won't do it for a few days with the weather being as it is, and that's why I say I'll be starting my 7-day, 12 to 14 hours a day now for quite a few months.
Can you tell me more about the greenhouse?
That's where I start my, I got a stove in there, wooden coal to heat it when I need it, and I transplant my peppers by hand, peppers, tomatoes, eggplant, start my cabbage in the greenhouse. I propagate all my plants. I get the seed, which I order. Usually have it ordered and paid for end of December, early January. And now, in fact, yesterday I sowed 2,000 or 3,000 tomato plants and a few more thousand pepper plants. I want to start cabbage pretty quick. But everything I grow on the farm, except sweet corn. Seed obviously comes from off the field. But all my plants are propagated on the farm by me. And I transplant by hand in the greenhouse approximately 15,000 plants per annum.
You mentioned over the phone that the valley is less productive with agriculture. Can you explain this more, and when do you think it started to happen, why?
The park came in. There used to be, in the 50s, there used to be all parts of the valley was farmed. Every bit of land you could farm was, but as time went on, obviously there's less farmers because it was more beneficial to go work in a steel mill or the automobile factory, kids, etc. Well, in our village, Valley View, the land went for commercial activity in some respects. And people got older, didn't farm it. There was two of us farmed in the valley, quite a bit of the land. Foots, well, three of us technically, Foots, Walters, and Johnston's. Walters phased out, and Foot, things have changed. When the park got it, the deer population was growing, and because the rules and regulations of the park and the deer, people backed off from farming it. Today, it's hard to farm in the valley with the deer population as such. Then you toss in the regulations of the government and park.
Well, with automobile steel, I have the park. Why do you think your farm lasted? Why didn't?
Because I'm not smart enough to sell it. I enjoy it. It's been my life. It's ruined my back, but that's the way it is, and I don't. It's been in the family, and there probably will come a time, but as of right now, it's going to stay that way. And it's amazing how things have changed, the things I've changed from my grandfather to father to me, and might change some more, but like I said, the one thing, I'd never go back to dairy, obviously. I'd never go back to raising hogs. Vegetables, as I told you, and you agree, the local stuff is in demand. The reason I sell stuff is because I'm reasonable in prices. I'm very reasonable in prices. I'm surprised the number of customers who tell me I should raise the price. But like I said, I have some nice help. I don't want to fight with people. But there's going to come a time when I can't do it physically. And, this food situation, as I said, could get serious because the demands. You know, India and China, they want meat now, which takes away corn from the United States. And that's why the price of stuff is going up here. And they're allowed now that they no longer have scooters in India. They have cars, so they want more oil, and we don't want to drill in the United States or whatever we want to do. But this food thing could get, well, you young people shouldn't understand the cost of food in the grocery store. It's almost cheaper to eat out than it is to buy it and prepare it yourself.
Do you think there was a big difference of farm types or anything that would make one farm last over another?
Well, it's the desire of the occupants of the land. It's interesting, my great-grandfather's, his sons couldn't wait to get away from the farm. And our side of the family, we've stayed in it pretty well. We've stayed in it. My uncle migrated to Wayne County. His son's in the veal business a tad. My brother kept at it on a small basis in the Columbus region. But, it's what turned you on. And, or if you see some economic opportunity and you like it, you pursue it to a certain degree. But as I state again, the young people today, there's easier avenues. There's easier avenues than farming.
What do you like about farming?
It's outside. You and nature. I used to enjoy going up the towpath with a tractor and be like being in a mini adventure across the plains to the field along the river and the woods and so forth. And like I said, that was before deer, what have you. Self-satisfaction. You can see what you do. That's one of the problems today. We're engulfed in computers and whatever. You don't see the product of your endeavor. If you farm, you can see the product of your endeavor. If the Amish are making furniture, they can see the end product. We don't see an end product. In many respects, it's not this is somewhat satisfactory, is you can see what you do. It's up to you. You do it. You do it just like the previous party here. He gets high on bailing and stores it in my barn. He has a good time. He's 70 and not going to stop. Self-satisfaction. But you got to, that's one of the problems in our country today. We don't do enough. We don't do enough physically to see what we've done. I always like to mow lawn because I could see, I still mow lawn. I like to see what I did.
is your farm, do you find it's in a good location?
Oh, I'm in a premier location for marketability. No question about it. And I could probably do more if I so desire, but I don't want to get into, I'm retired, I don't want more headaches. I got enough headaches as it is, let alone putting up buildings and, you know, buying off-season from market, et cetera.
Why is the location good for market?
Well, I have a tremendous amount of people around me. They need food. And I'm reasonable, as I say. And the quality, I'm told, is pretty good. That's why they come back.
Do you find that grocery stores or anything in the area are big competition?
Well, they're competition because it's ease. It's, you know, it's easy. You don't even have to cook anymore. You go in a grocery store and pick up a meal already prepared. I've never done it, but I'm presuming it must be all right because they're still doing it. But sure, it's competition, but people want fresh, quality stuff. You know, the same thing with you. When you go out to dinner, you go to certain restaurants because of the quality, the price, whatever it may be. The same reason they come to me. You know, one of the things I've had, I don't grow that many onions, but this candy onion is so sweet, it's unreal. And it's another innovation from breeders. And, you know, you look at the price of onions in the store today. It's unreal for a silly onion. You know, you're paying $1.50 a pound for sweet onions. That's a joke.
Can you tell me what a typical day is like during harvest season?
Well, I try to be in the field picking. We want to open up the stand about 10, 11. Let's see what time we want to start. About 10 o'clock, I guess. But I'm usually in the field at 10, picking sweet corn. And if I have help coming, that's great. And sporadically during the day, I'll pick as needed for the stand from the other vegetables. Now, when we close the stand and they have pick your own, we don't want to open until 9:30, 10, and then we usually go to dark because people come after work. And they're looking, again, with today's economy, if one can pick their own, if you can pick a head of cabbage for $1.25, you can do a lot of food for $1.25 out of cabbage. And if you can pick, you know, tomatoes, which I sell at 60 cents a pound, pick your own, it's a lot different than $2.99 in the store right now and not having any taste. And so that's why people come in. I'm surprised the Indian number of professionals, people that come in. I'm talking doctors, engineers. This one gal was out of Cincinnati visiting. She was what's the skin doctor? Not the dermatologist, but she was doing operations. Wow, highly educated. But then, like I said, in September we wanted to close Sundays, but some of our customers says we work 6 days a week. We got to come out on Sunday, so we try to stay open Sunday 10 to 2 or 3 and give them a chance to get stuff. Because in fact, there was two Indians there last fall. They owned, their husbands owned gas stations in Medina County, picking stuff, and they were there to 4 or 5 o'clock. He says, "We can't. We're traveling a long time. We let us stay." I let them stay as I watched the football game for once in a while.
Who else works the stand with you?
Like I said, a couple retired teachers help me out. and once in a while a kid across the street nearby.
In terms of actual planting and picking, do you, the process for doing that, are you using?
I'm relying mostly on myself and maybe a somebody once in a while to help me a tad. But the majority of stuff is in the fall is pick your own. You'd be amazed at some of the amount of peppers some people take out of there. I'm talking a bushel. I'm talking, a wheelbarrow full sometime. It's amazing, the canning and freezing.
And what are your goals for your farm?
I wish I could know. Be most honest with you, I wish I knew. Because there's going to come a time, as I well state, I don't know. I'd like to see it continue to be agriculture if someone wishes to work it. But as you know, nothing is in stone anymore. And I got to consider the taxation scenario. Interesting, a few years ago, somebody said the government pays everybody else something. They should pay vegetable growers something to grow food. And they're right. Because as you should know, drive around your Cleveland Heights and your... I didn't get where you're from.
I'm from North Olmsted.
Well, you have a little bit in Lorain County yet. Lorain County used to be a great agricultural region. Not so much anymore. Oh, yes, because you still have that region with the peaches, of course. I forget the name of the. They've got three or four farms out there. They do a great job. They're big. But you take North Ridgeville, that's premier, great farmland, which is done. It's all houses now.
Do you have any memories growing up?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Can you share with us?
Well, yeah, this question was formulated to me before, but I probably one of the fondest memories is being in the barn at milking time in the winter, warm, cozy, and of course I didn't have to do much because I was young. Maybe if I had to do something, it'd be different. Riding a tractor as a youth, and like I say, you go up the canal, the farm. That was nice. I used to hate it as a kid, loved it as an adult. But that's normal, how you change your perspective. And I guess the other thing would be, once in a while you have dry weather. Man, that was tough. That was tough. Because our soil is sand and gravel, which doesn't hold stuff. And if you have a problem, man, that hurts. That hurts. But then when you don't have a problem, it's nice.
What do you do when you do have dry weather?
Plow it, disc it down. Can't do much. And that was one of the problems this last annum with, Russia had a dry, didn't have a bad wheat crop. That's why wheat and corn is up, because the supply in Russia wasn't up to par. And, that causes problems. But I remember as animals as young. When I was growing up, we just were phasing out of the horse stage. And that was all right because I didn't have to harness the horse. A lot easier turning the key on a tractor. The Amish are amazing with horses. They are absolutely amazing. This one fellow, he has six horses tied up to a two-bottom plow. And it's amazing how quiet it is and how refreshing it is to walk with them and hear the alfalfa, what's gets snapped and turned over, and the horses, you know, grunting once in a while. It's a real peaceful feeling. Wouldn't want to do it, but it's nice.
When did your first tractors?
I think there was some, because we were we were not innovative on our farm. We were, like I said, we had financial problems. We had too many families and people trying to make a living from the farm. And because we got burned a couple times with problems financially, the depression, etc., I think the first tractor was in the 40s. And late 40s, then we got a Ellis Chalmers B. I remember that one quite well. And then in the late 50s, we started getting some nicer tractors, starting out with John Deere's. No, Ferguson's first. What am I thinking? Two Ferguson 35s. My sister's got both of them now that are pushing 60 years old. Might be 70 years old, 65 years old. But then we grew, obviously, as economics helped. Dad working the steel mill gave us a tad more expendable income. But the equipment today is unbelievable in cost, but good. It's good stuff. But the Fergusons were the first ones of real importance. Had a case, I think, in the 40s. That thing, I guess, drank gasoline like a camel, as my uncle and dad used to say.
Your dad used to work in the steel mill?
Well, he didn't work in the steel mill. He worked for the steel mill. He maintained the canal. We were responsible, and I helped him in the summer during my collegiate times. And after that, during the summer when I was teaching, I helped him. We cut the weeds, maintained the canal, make it passable, which now is the park has. But they used to use the water in the steel mill to cool the steel. And they had an agreement with the state of Ohio. Well, you know what happened to steel mills. So, and then the park jumped on it, of course.
You mentioned your sister has some of the old tractors. Does she have a farm as well?
Yeah, they have a mini farm up in northwestern part of Ohio, and her husband's quite knowledgeable with mechanics, and he restored the old tractors for them, and they're using them as utility tractors, which is great. She wanted one of Dad's tractors, so she got it. In fact, you might mention the canal. My grandmother used to skate to school in the wintertime occasionally, because where Wilson Mills is, in fact, I got another story to tell you. She'd walk down Alexander Road, which was not the current Alexander Road, and skate to Tinker's Creek, and then walk down to the schoolhouse, which is now the church down there, which is on the way to the previous interviewer. She used to do that. Then in her youth, the canal ended, the flood of 1813, January 1813. And that was, the flood destroyed the canal. It was a horrendous flood in the state of Ohio. You see pictures of Dayton with the top of a light pole sticking out. But before 1813, my grandmother used to make pies and take them over the hill to the inn on the canal where the boats would stop. She'd make a little extra money. So she would have been what then? She'd have been 13, 12, 92. 1801, she'd have been 10, 12 years old, so she could make pies. And she'd take them over the hill and sell them to the inn, where people would stay over on the boats, obviously have something to eat, probably more sometimes drinking than eating, but that's another scenario. In fact, the last guy to go through the canal was Babe Wilson, Charles Wilson Sr., 1813, he was about, what, 20-something, 1820, 18 or 20 years old. And he was the last guy to go from Cleveland to Portsmouth, Ohio, on the canal before the flood came in 13, as I state, and destroyed it. And Babe died about 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
Can you tell me any more about the flood?
Well, not really. You and I are would get more from the chronicles of the printed material back then. The only reason I mentioned the flood of 13, that's when the working aspect of the canal stopped. But it's interesting that they today, you know, all this flooding is caused by this or that. Well, back in 1813, you didn't have houses because Ohio became a state in 1803. And you had 1913 was the end of the canal. I said 1813, as you're well aware of. 1913 was the end of the canal, 1913 flood. And, okay, so you're talking almost 100 years since that. Well, we had a flood, needless to say, last 2 months ago. And there was one June 22nd, 2006. I remember one in July 4th, 1969. So when Mother Nature wants to go on a rampage, you aren't going to stop her, because the flooding was immense in 1913. That was the worst flood ever. And it's not so bad, as bad sometimes now. 1913 flood, yeah.
Do you have any questions?
No,
Or anything that we should have asked or you'd like to add?
Well, you're primarily interested in agriculture, you say? Mm-hmm. Well, this was one of the hotbeds of agriculture at one time, the greater Cleveland area. Farmers used to take their produce, which we did too, and I remember the late 50s and early 60s taking produce down to growers, which was off Broadway. It's not quite to where the Jacobs Field is now, but we used to be all kinds of stuff down there. But the amount of agriculture around the greater Cleveland area in the 40s and 50s, early 60s was immense. Now you have hardly any. And things have changed, and I don't know for the better either. Economically, it's become ridiculous to grow produce, and people don't work the way they do back then because you can't survive economically. But I can remember going with my dad and taking, that would be 60 baskets of corn to market, which would be 180 dozen. Remember picking it in the afternoon or morning and packing it in the afternoon and taking it down at night. But that doesn't happen anymore. This, you know, what little farming is done here. And as I state to you, Andrea, in Lorain County, that used to be a big, you go out Route 10, used to be a lot of agriculture there. Now today it's all houses. But it changes. It changes. I don't know if it ever come back. The mechanization they have in California and Florida for planting stuff is frightening. It's amazing what they can do. And you have to be big today to really, really make it. If you're a little guy, you got to have a wife that has a good income. You have to have a job. The secret is to marry a gal who has money and land, preferably both, mm-hmm. which is hard to do. But if you look at the pattern of change, in a way it's sad that things aren't preserved in some respect anymore. The Cahoga River Valley was prettier. It was prettier. Gotta watch my comparative. The Cahoga River Valley was prettier in the 50s than it is now, in the early 60s, because you had farmland, you had pasture land, you had trees. Today you have brush and houses, which is kind of sad. And I'm getting like my dad, when you go back by a place, you say, I remember so-and-so farming there. I remember picking up bales of hay here or there. Well, you don't pick up many bales of hay today anywhere. And it's really, really changed, and it's not for the best either, my humble opinion.
Okay.
But it was a pretty valley at one time. And today there's no reason to be in agriculture. It's a tough business. It's a tough business. A lot easier to work for somebody else. I'm a prime example of that. But still, I'm entrepreneuring a tad myself. Whether it's a sickness or what, I don't know. Because I can't watch television. You don't watch so much of the stock market.
Out of time.